On this podcast, we usually talk about mental health and psychology, but we never really speak about how you can get there, how it's like to study psychology, what are the challenges that you face, how hard or easy it is. So in today's episode, we have with us Diya Khatri, who is an MA in psychology with a clinical specialization. She talks to us about the challenges that she faced during her undergraduate, postgraduate, and even while practicing therapy. This episode is going to be really helpful to all the aspiring psychologists out there. So without further ado, let's get right into the episode. So on today's episode, where we talk about challenges faced while going from master's to actually practicing therapy, Dia, we have many aspiring psychologists that listen to our podcast. What are some pieces of advice that you would give an undergraduate psychology student and a student who's doing master's in psychology?
Sure. So, one is if you just look at undergraduate, I think that is an area where you're still exploring a lot of areas of psychology. Even areas of psychology are exploring what psychology is. Right now, at that stage in your TY stage or in your BA stage, you have a very limited understanding of psychology. So one is I would just suggest and recommend to really look at different areas of psychology. Look at cognitive, look at neuro. What are your interests, saying? So, you may feel like a pressure sometimes to narrow down on something, but try to kind of just look openly and try looking at different areas because psychology is always upcoming. There's always something new. So stay updated. That's definitely one thing. Another thing is research. So that was one thing where I didn't really focus on because I was so like scared of research. And in my BA, I was like, I don't think I can do research. This is just something for your master's. But I would definitely say to dive into research in your BA because in BA, you're actually learning a lot of the concepts. So looking at even publishing papers because you do get a lot of opportunities like this in your BA. So definitely looking at publishing papers. We had a research club called the Research Reading Club. And I think that was so important because even what a research paper is, it looks at so many things. So understanding how do I learn, how do I even understand this graph? Because otherwise you're going to directly go into publishing a paper for your dissertation. So that's a huge jump. So kind of building those steps in between is really important. So you understand the crux of research. Research is all about curiosity. Otherwise research seems very daunting, but if you're if you're curious about what is happening, why is it happening, what is the link between this, research is the best way to go about it. So keep reading and keep updating yourself. Definitely. One other tip I would definitely say is, in TY we might feel a little restricted with the amount of books that is given. Your recommended reading, yeah, only read from this, learn this one paragraph from this abnormal psychology textbook. Go outside the box. That was one thing I did a lot, was because I mean at that time I was more of getting all the marks and getting all the grades and stuff like that. So I did the extra reading. But I mean that I, now that I look at it in hindsight, I would definitely say to keep that secondary and look at different books. What are different books saying about the same concept? What are you learning something different? Yes, abnormal psychology. Yes, disorders, but what is a disorder? Look at it, go into the depth. Because in BA, if you have that depth, masters will be much easier. Much, much easier. Other thing is do internships, do volunteering work. This is the only way you'll understand the hands-on experience. I worked with Mindtemple 5 years before, since I actually got employed at the place. So for me, that hands-on experience was so important. Understanding the real essence of therapy and actually how it works. I was never a therapist. I didn't do anything close to therapy in those 5 years. I just did basic calls. How do you speak to people? How do you understand people? Like just basics. Start with basics. Yeah. That is for undergraduates. For postgraduates, it's a little different because now you're stepping into a field of deciding, right? Between clinical, counseling, industrial, different fields. But understanding, you might find the segregation very, cut to cut. In reality, when you're actually practicing, it's really similar. I mean, I don't call myself, I'm not a clinical psychologist. I'm a psychologist with a clinical specialization. So yeah, only some areas are specialized. But when we actually compared notes in our MA part two, like our last semester, it was so similar. But just, some approaches might be more like focused on disorders. Just approaches are slightly different. So that is one thing. Prep a lot. Keep prepping in your summer before your MA because MA seems a lot because actually it is a lot. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of gaps to be filled in your knowledge. So do a little bit of prep, something that I didn't do and something that I always recommend to people that do ask me, okay, how do I prep for MA? Just read your TY books again. Understand it. Don't read it for the purpose of recreating it in a paper. Don't do it just for those 15 marks you want to get. do it for the understanding that you want, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work that's going to happen in MA. So really work every day. I was mm-hmm. someone in my first semester, I was a little bit overconfident because my TY was in Mithibai. So it was very tough, very rigorous course. So mm-hmm. when I came to MA, I was like, oh yeah, I can chill. I can take it easy. Not chill. Yeah. It's very different, even though they're teaching honestly the same thing. Your MA, your first year in MA is almost the same as your TY, but it's different. Mm-hmm. It's not the same, it's slightly different. There's more mm-hmm. in-depth understanding of concepts. So work on understanding those concepts, because when you go out in the field, your the rote learning that you've done of that 3 pages of a counseling textbook is not going to matter. The understanding mm-hmm. is going to matter. So focus on really understanding and integrating the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just some of the things.
Yeah. Yeah, just to like add to that, Dee, I completely agree with it, since I want to pursue a career in psychotherapy and I'll be going for my master's. I think what you said about, you know, looking outside the textbook and just reading a lot about stuff which, you know, which just increases your knowledge in terms of how deep you go into the subject. I feel like just to know what you want to do, you have to keep reading to like building on your knowledge. So yeah, I completely agree with that.
Definitely, yeah.
All right, so the next question would be, where did you pursue your master's? And can you give our listeners an overview of your experience as you pursued your master's?
Sure. So when I got done with my TY, which was in Mithibai, TY, so just going a little bit, giving a little bit context. So when I did my third year in BA in Mithibai, it was very, very challenging. It was, I think... much more tougher even than I think both my MA years combined, because I just took on a lot of stress. You know, it's very competitive, the field. So that was one thing. And the thing is, I was so used to the structure that my, you know, the professors gave us in TY. They gave us a very good skeleton. So I was very used to working in that format, but I knew I was getting too much in my comfort zone. So I didn't want to do it from that place. So then I was like, you know, I think maybe I'll have to step out of my box. I did it from Manibai Nanavati Women's College. It is a sister college of SNDT, and it, I think, was easily the best decision I made. I have loved and loved my master's course, and I couldn't recommend it enough. I was very pumped when I got into that college, because that was the only college I applied to. So I was like, thank God, otherwise I don't know what I would have gotten into.
Yeah.
So I did apply for Amity as well, but I was more keen on, you know, staying over here because I wanted to do internships, and I liked the course curriculum because they had a lot of external stuff. You had a lot of, in your second year, you did internship at a hospital, at a government hospital, you know, your dissertation. And so the experience that Manibai and Nanavati Women's College gave me was just amazing and unparalleled. I think when I look at experience in my first year, as I said, I was a little bit overconfident when I came in. So I think one was the teachers, now in MA, they're coming with the understanding that you know psychology, right? You're not starting with your basics. They are under the assumption that you know your basics. So now you have to build on those basics. So the first year of MA is actually almost a recreation of your third year. So it's very similar, but now you'll be adding more books on your board. You're adding experiments on, you know, on your plate. There's a lot that's added on. And there's a lot of filing work to do. There's a lot of writing work to do. I was not very comfortable with writing. Writing was something that was very personal to me. But to now, you know, make it seem in a more professional manner, I was so scared. I used to write like till the deadline. The deadline said like 3 p.m. till 2:59. I was still like trying to put in more words, trying to make it better. So, you know, there was this... It's very competitive. That is one thing that I'll say. It doesn't seem like a competition because everyone's being a therapist, so they're all trying to be nice to each other. But it is competitive. Psychology is actually very competitive. So, you know, everyone has their grades in their 80s. When I came into my MA, I was like, wow, everyone here is really smart. How am I going to cope? So it was a lot of me to kind of just channelize it into myself rather than the external. That was one thing. One other thing that I, you know, specify and give most importance is the self-work that you do in MA. Because now you're going to be directly going to the field. So those 2 years of prep are very important, yes, from an education standpoint, yes, from an academic standpoint. But actually looking at it in terms of your own work, who am I as a person? I did therapy. I was so glad that in my first year in MA, I did therapy. And that was easily an amazing decision I made. I didn't have any present problem. But there were some things in the past that I was so afraid that what if this comes up in a session with a client, like 2 years down the line? So there are so many things that you need to work on yourself. And our teachers also focused on a lot of group work. So all of us, you know, clinic, we had a clinical class and a counseling class. We used to sit separately. We used to voice our concerns, be expressive, because that is something you're going to be asking from your clients in a way, you know, a year down the line. So are you able to be honest? Are you able to be authentic? So, you know, really working on your inner self. And that is tough, because you're not just now looking at academics. You're also kind of, you know, like kind of opening the Pandora's box a little bit. Because your work, you're going to be reading a lot of things that are going to click to you. There were times I got so uncomfortable in class because I read something that resonated with, you know, what happened previously to me. So I was, it was like, okay, how do I? And I started to tell my teacher this, like, you know, I think I need a breather. It's getting a little heavy for me. But, you know, it's like almost noticing, you're catching yourself in that moment. And I feel that was so important. That work is so important. Catching yourself in the moment. Okay, I'm feeling vulnerable right now. Okay, what is making me feel vulnerable? Then, you know, going into the depths of it, seeing my patterns, noticing, okay, I'm drinking water because I'm feeling stressed about what the teacher's talking about. You know, that definitely self-work is very important in your MA. And that is something that I really, really emphasize on. In our second year, we had an internship with a hospital, a government hospital. So I interned at JJ Hospital. It was a part of our course curriculum, and it was an amazing experience. Just the reason being, you would never, I don't think you'll ever be exposed to, you know, such kind of work that they do over there. It's so fast paced, it's so much of work. You're doing 10 IQ tests in a day, something that I struggle to do one right now. But I was like, how the hell did I do 10 at that time in just a span of few hours? There's so much of you're just working. You're just like on and off. And I feel that work is so important. And that was one of my favorite experiences from, you know, from MA. Yeah, definitely.
Also, you spoke about your master's. Do you think your master's was like that turning point in your life, and like it sort of changed you as a person, obviously for the better, I'd say.
Yeah,
do you think?
Definitely. You know, it's so in Gestalt, there's this thing called, and I love this concept, it's called the paradoxical theory of change. So instead of, I don't think I became better. I just think I became more attuned with who I actually was. So it was just more of like accepting myself and tuning into the real me, the who I am. What are my vulnerabilities? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What are some things that I hate talking about? You know, understanding those inhibitions that you have as a person. Like maybe for me earlier, like silence was something that was so difficult. But like actually having those, we used to have a lot of role plays in class, and I never went for those role plays. I used to hide behind my book and just tell my teacher, no, I can't be the therapist. I don't think I can ever be a therapist. Why have I come here? And my teacher just used to be like, just sit. Just start with your basics. Just listen. Nothing else. Don't do anything. Don't respond. Just listen. So you need to have a little bit of a deep dive, you know, because in your part four of your MA, you're going to be taking therapy sessions. You're going to have like about six clients. I had like around six clients that I was seeing for therapy. I'm not very good at Hindi, but I did therapy in Hindi. That's not easy. So it was like, it's like the translation. So I was like, okay, I want to talk about this. Now, how do I translate it to Hindi and then say it? So there are challenges that are going to come up. And you have to accept those challenges. So I used to tell my client, I'm so sorry, I'm so bad at Hindi. So just give me a moment. You know, just, you know, being accountable for, okay, this is not my strong suit. So just give me some time to like rephrase what I'm thinking. So it's like, you know, it's like a dance between a client and a, you know, counselor. It's a dance. Yeah. Therapy is almost like this dance that you're doing between the two of you. So, you know, understanding the dynamic, definitely.
Yeah. I think my parents heard it. They were like, India mein rahe Hindi nahi aati.
I'm so ashamed that I'm still so poor at Hindi. I think when I went to the hospital, it became much better. But I feel now it's become bad, so I need to start training myself into Hindi.
You spoke about obviously your struggle with Hindi right now. What are some other struggles you faced during your master's and also while going from master's to actually practicing therapy?
I think one of the challenges would definitely be, I am still, you know, perfectionist in a way. So I love structure. I love when something is just laid out in front of me and I just want to do it. You know, there's not much of thinking. But with your master's, there's a lot of, you have to be flexible. You have to kind of, you know, understand. And then I think like BA gives you a structure. How I look at it is BA gives you a structure. Master gives you like a skeleton. And therapy is like, okay, now improvise. Be flexible. So those were like personal challenges for me. And that is something that I actually did a lot of self-work on to understand, okay, what about structure is so like comfortable? And what about flexibility is not comfortable? So, you know, understanding how to even like improvise as a counselor, because, you know, we feel like, okay, when the client will say this, we're going to do this, 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 and this is how it works. No, that's not actually how it works. It's going to be very different. You're going to have new sets of challenges every day. So definitely, I would say the challenge one would be keep reflecting on what's happening in your sessions. Keep reflecting even sometimes on your feelings. Sometimes you may feel uncomfortable what the client said. And we feel a little pinched. Okay, what? Why am I feeling pinched? Just keep it in your mind. Just kind of put it in a box for a second. Finish with the therapy and actually come out and reflect on what happened. That was one challenge I definitely was working on a lot. When you're, you know, with masters, there's a lot of studying. So there's a lot of just sitting down. I used to sit down on one spot and study for like easily 8-9 hours at a stretch. And that is so unhealthy. Like I see it now. Like it was a very stiff, like very sedentary life. So I didn't move. I didn't, and I was someone that was very active. So just sitting and studying, I could see like, you know, they're like blocks coming up. Like sometimes I just couldn't understand what, like I'm reading a page 20 times. I'm like, what the hell is happening? What is, what are people saying here? I'm not understanding. So I, you know, one thing I would definitely like give like a tip is keep moving, walk around, take breaks. Because yes, studying is a lot of it. And studying is a very big part of psychology. And it's a lot of studying, a lot of reading to do. But also understand that you need to take breaks. You need to draw some lines somewhere. So understanding your boundaries, that is one thing that I was learning throughout my BA to my MA, was that learning boundaries and understanding, okay, I need to take a break now. I need to go meet my friends. You don't really, you don't really have a social life when you're doing psychology. So really trying, you have to push yourself. You have to meet people, you know. So I think that is also very important.
Also, Dia, you earlier spoke about how you were stressed in your third year of BA, and I think even sort of in your master's. Were there days where you just went home and you're like, I just don't want to do this anymore, you know, just that sort of giving up? And what would you do on days like these? Like, you know, how would you sort of deal with that situation?
Definitely. So, so one of the, so I was, so actually in my second year, a little bit context, second year BA, I was actually going to become a dancer. I was set out to be a professional dancer. I was like, this is what my life is going to be. I'm going to dance for a living and I love it. And then I started seeing challenges coming up in dance. I was like, oh, I don't really like it. And I was like, okay, you know what? Psychology is my thing. I'm good in psychology. So, you know, and then in my third year, I was like, oh my God. In third year, I was like, I don't think I want to do psychology. I said, okay, now what do I do? So I was trying to find other things. And I was like, but I really love psychology. So, you know, there are just times where you're not going to be able to see the bigger picture. And those are the days you need to take an off. And that's when I did. There were times where I used to just sit at my cog. Like, if you actually see my, I think my abnormal textbook, and I was not a big fan of positive psychology. So there are actually tear stains on my positive psychology textbook, like still there. The other day I was looking at them and I was like, wow, I was like really crying throughout this thing. And, you know, those days are going to be challenging. And it's really important to kind of step out of your present and just look at the future. Like, what is the broader sense? What is your bigger picture? If every day you are feeling this way, then maybe you need to reflect and understand, okay, is psychology something? There are going to be days when you're going to be like, I don't want to talk to people. Like, I mean, I'm saying this now, there are days when I come back from work where I've worked almost 12 hours. I look at my family and say, don't talk to me. I don't want to hear a word coming out of your mouth. I'm done listening. And that's real. You're going to feel exhausted. So there are times you need to take a break. And that is something that I still struggle with. So that is like my own like reflection of taking breaks, you know, taking that some time out just for yourself. Do something, just dance. Like for me, dance is like an escape, or like paint. I'm a terrible painter. I'm a terrible artist. But like this year, you know what? I'm going to make terrible paintings. And that's my goal, is to make something terrible and not something amazing. So like, you know, really putting yourself out there in a way, but also like understanding what your comfort level is. If you need a break, take a break. That is, because it is daunting and it's long term. The thing is, psychology is just not now. It's not like now I'm a therapist, I'm done with studying. No, I'm still studying. I start, I do courses almost every month. You know, it's, you have to keep updating yourself about what's happening, because definitions are changing, theories are changing, therapies are changing, you know, therapists are changing. So you're, it's a long journey, it's not a destination. So, you know, like after I'm done with master's, I'm done. No, it's just actually, it just started. Now you've started somewhere. So like looking at it long term, and then when you see the bigger picture, it might feel a little bit more secure. So then taking a step back from that.
No, that's actually so true. I feel like the whole idea of boundaries, which you put across, is so real. And I feel like a lot of people, when they're going into the field of becoming a therapist, you know, they struggle with this a lot. They're like, oh, I'm a therapist. I have to always be there for my clients. I need to keep responding to calls. I have to give them an appointment, even if I'm not feeling at my best. So it's a lot of like compromising yourself. And honestly, a part of being a good therapist is to take care of yourself, right? Like you said, self-work is super important. So I think I completely agree with that. And also another thing, I feel like a lot of people who are going into their masters just like fear is that, you know, the whole transition from doing your masters and then going into actually practicing. So what were the preparations you did as you transitioned from studying to actually practicing therapy?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys, this is your girl Lira, and you're listening to Self-Reflection Podcast. Thank you guys for joining me on another episode of Self-Reflection Podcast. I hope this podcast episode finds you in the best possible state that you can be in for yourself today. You know, and if you're not doing your best, I hope, you know, you find some time to care for your mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, and your psychological health. You know, I hope you find some time to do some self-reflection. Just gather yourself and, you know, find the best possible way you can deal with what you're dealing with in this moment, right?
Yeah, I actually resonate with that question quite a lot. So just a little bit of a history. So I got done. So when March hit last year, 2020, March 2020, we were just in the process of like, you know, wrapping up with dissertations, and we were going to give our exams like 2 weeks later. You know, so I was so nowhere even looking at what the papers were. I was like, what are the subjects I'm even doing? Because your second year of master's, you're just so focused on your dissertation and your case file work, because that holds a very big chunk. I was like, wait, what do I have to even study? And I was so clueless. And when the pandemic hit, like we got a little bit of extension, this happened. And then they told us, okay, no, you don't have any exams. I was like, hurry, how can we not give, for me, I was like, how can we not give exams for our last semester? Then they said, you'd have exams, but it's going to be months down the line. So from almost March to like, I would say September, those months I think were so tough for me, because I was just like doubting myself the entire time. Because, you know, till March, I was like constantly working or constantly doing sessions. You're feeling comfortable now. You know, you're in that spot where you start to feel comfortable with therapy. You're talking, you're understanding, you know, okay, I was like, yeah, I use this technique today. I use that technique. So things are clicking. And then I had like this really long gap, and I was like, wait, how am I gonna do this now? I felt like, you know, I don't think I can do therapy anymore. Maybe this is not for me, because how did I forget to do therapy? Like for me, it's like almost forgetting like how to be, if a chef is like, how I forgot how to cook. I was like, how do I forgot to be a therapist? And I had so many months where I was just doubting myself. I was like, I can't do this. How will I be a therapist in a pandemic? How will I talk to clients, like, you know, on a screen? I need to see them. I need to see their body language. So, you know, again, I saw myself fitting into a box, fitting into certain criteria, you know, again, that, you know, the challenge with structure. So, you know, kind of opening up that idea. And then when we gave our exams, I think in around October, we got our results. And then, you know, I was working with Mind Temple for like, you know, 5 years. So they might, you know, my doctor Anjali Chabria told me, okay, so by November you're joining. And I was like, ah, I don't think so. I was like, are you sure? You know, I just see one client. And she's like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, take it, you know, take it easy. You've just started out. Like, she could see I was like feeling uncomfortable. So then a lot of the, you know, you're going to have this imposter syndrome. I feel everyone in a way may have it. I definitely feel it. So, you know, I went back to my basics. I was like, you know what? Right now, let's not go into the advanced. Just go a few blocks down the ladder. What was your basic? Then I went to, I remember opening up one of my favorite books. And then I looked at, you know, a book on PCT. And I just read PCT. I was like, this was what it was. I was like, almost like, you know, like refreshing myself. Like it was like a refresher's course. I was just reading. I was like, you're not learning anything. You're not given an exam. Now there's no exam. Now you're just going into the field. So you just have to work. So definitely it is challenging. You'll have a lot of pandemic anxiety as a therapist. Because you're going to have, every conversation is going to start with pandemic. And it is all uncertain. Clients mm-hmm. will always ask you, okay, when is this going to end? I mean, I don't know. No one knows when this is going to end. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of uncertainty that you are going to be dealing with as a therapist. So it's, you know, that constant reminder of, you know, finding your safety in that uncertainty. How do I find it in uncertainty? And I'm going to be like this whole conversation mostly focusing on the therapist, not so much on the client, because that's different. Yeah. But really focusing on what is my safety in this uncertainty, because it is difficult. Mm-hmm. That transition is definitely difficult, but I would say ease back into it. So mm-hmm. almost like November, December was very, I took it really slow. I started very slowly. I did a lot of observations. I did a lot of observing sessions, speaking to a lot of my seniors. So a lot of my seniors have done like 7 years in psychology, like, you know, in therapy. So speaking to them, understanding them, you know, really like just hearing. I was just like being a very active listener. Mm-hmm. Just hearing what they're going through. I was like, okay, these are some challenges that I face, you know, and getting their opinion on it. Like if you're working in an organization, take advantage of your seniors. Their mm-hmm. seniors for a reason. Speak to them. Speak what challenges came up in your sessions. Obviously, you know, keeping confidentiality intact. Speak to them, you know, this happened in a session. How do I navigate this situation? Take help. You know, we always tell our clients, yeah, please reach out for help. You also should take some help. Reach out for support. If you don't know how to go about a situation, reach out for help. So, you know, just knowing that you do have that support system between this transition is very crucial.
Right. Okay. So, Diya, you spoke about the challenges you face. Now, if I had to ask you, what are the three main things that you learned on the way from, you know, MA to practicing your therapy and while doing your preparations?
Okay. The first thing was something that I said before, but I'm going to reiterate now, was it's a journey. Mm-hmm. You're going to keep learning. You're going to keep growing. You're going to keep even falling.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an upward trajectory. Like, you know how we say healing is not linear? Even for you, it's not linear. There are going to be ups and downs. There was a time where I just felt like, you know, I don't think I am making sense. And there was a lot of me work that I had to do. So, you know, coming back to the second point of self-work. Self-work is so important during this transition. Because now you're going to have self-doubt setting. You're going to have clients. You're going to have various diverse clients, you know, understanding their needs. What are their needs? And separating them from my needs. And if I'm having a need as a therapist, reflecting and questioning, why am I having a need for my client? You know, so it's a lot to do with, what's the word? It's a lot to do with those really small factors that do add up to the big factor. So going back in, so one is looking at it as a journey and not a destination. Self-work, again, being very important. And also, again, you know, being open to experiences. Like, working at Mind Temple, we have an institute called the Mind Temple Institute of Behavioral Sciences, where we look at, you know, having workshops and training programs for corporate companies and stuff like that. And that is such a different aspect to psychology that you don't really see, you know. So this was something that was so interesting. So I even, like, you know, dove into that, and I'm working actively even in that field. So, you know, really being open to a lot of experiences that come your way, like going into it, understanding it. And yeah, you may fail. But and if you're working in an organization, you will have your, you know, seniors to compliment you. If you're failing, ask for help. So, you know, it's that balance. It's like, again, I like to always think of it in terms of music and dance, because I resonate with that. So, you know, it's that harmonize. It's that harmonizing element. So, yeah.
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 I definitely agree with that too. I feel like to be open to, like, your own experiences, it makes you more flexible with your clients as well, you know? You don't want to be resistant towards what they are saying and how, and their needs. Like, you don't want to just let your needs come in the way of actually helping someone else. So I think that is really, really inspiring. Also, like, since you had, like, this really, like, up and down journey, right? So, like, if you were given a chance to start over after you finished your MA, would you do things differently?
So I would say yes and no. So some things that I would do differently would, being a little bit more proactive, you know? There were times where, you know, obviously you do need your break, not saying no, but there were like long periods of time where I would take very long breaks, and that was not needed. And breaks would not even be like, okay, I was doing something else. I was just like, oh, you know, just like kind of in this lull phase. I was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. So, you know, like, if you don't want to do something, just look at something else, because actually MA is pretty rigorous and it's really important. It's not the grades. Now I see it. It's not the grades. It's a lot to do with your learning. And a lot of I had an excellent, like a really good professors that, you know, helped us, you know, understand the crux of therapy, understand the crux of psychology, and really bringing that even in us. So, you know, that was, you know, those are the things that I would definitely work on, is just to be a little bit more proactive, not leave a lot of my submissions for the last minute, not procrastinating as much as I did. Just like catching yourself in those moments. Like sometimes I would procrastinate because we had a lot of self-work and, you know, reflection assignments. So I would procrastinate because I was like, oh, I really don't want to think about all of this right now.
Yeah.
You know, so knowing that, okay, I'm having some inhibitions here. What are my inhibitions speaking of? So, you know, you have to be super aware of your present in a way, and also taking a break. So it's that balance of both. But yeah, there were times where I was just like, I can't do this assignment. This is too personal. And I could really tell my professor, like, I think I need a day more. And she's to be like, yeah, okay, fair. Like, I just need some time more. So they were obviously very understanding in that sense. You know, getting back, one thing that I would definitely say is that right after I finished MA, there was a time I was like, maybe I need like a break, you know. After I got my results, I was like, no, I just can't get into therapy right now. Like, I'm not prepared. But I was like, you know what? Again, as I said before, like, start with your basics, build on it. And just know the groove of it. And there are going to be a little bit of backfalls that are going to happen. But just catch yourself. So I did a lot of, like, in a way, I still, like, after a session, I still write down what happened for me. And that really helped me kind of feel a little bit more comfortable. Because, you know, the long gap I had, that was difficult. So, you know, just being comfortable and getting into therapy will, just getting your groove back into it will help.
Also, about the part where you spoke about not to focus on marks, I think I agree with you because, like, if you place your focus completely on marks, you close your mind to everything else. Like, you know, that's the only focus that you have. And so you just don't care about actually learning anything outside your theory book. Like, how you spoke initially, how you went out of the box and, you know, learned from other books. I think you sort of don't tend to do that if you focus completely on getting marks.
Definitely.
Right. Neha, can you give the aspiring psychologist some pointers when it comes to etiquettes they should and should not have with their clients?
Sure. So in TY, right, you have a subject on counseling, and there I like distinctly remember this chapter on ethics in counseling, and I was very good with that chapter because I was like, this all makes sense, and, you know, because I've done it in second year also. And when in reality, when I even stepped into the space of therapy in my second year of master's, I realized that is just the basic, and there is so much more into that. You know, there is so much more even in the sense of accountability. You know, we are preaching this sense of, you know, ownership, accountability to our clients. You know, we're speaking about, own up, talk about it. But there are times where you also need to be accountable in a client and, you know, in a client and counselor setting. Sometimes a client will be like, they will have a face, and you check with them, okay, was that okay what I said? They'll say, no, okay, fair. So understanding, you know, you're not, so there was an idea of therapy that I had years ago, which was that, you know, I am this person, and this person is learning something from me. So a lot of that deconstruction of that idea of therapy, it's not, you are this very big person that, you know, you're giving pravachans. That's not that. We're not doing that. It's a relationship that you're forming with the other person. And what is the crux of the relationship? What are the beliefs you're forming the relationship with? So there are times you're, you know, going to have that. So be accountable. Own up if something has gone wrong. Tell your client. If your client is telling you, you know, this is something you said, I didn't like it. Own up to it. Understand it. You know, we might get up our defenses, being like, no, I'm such a good therapist. I have done so much work. So many clients I've worked with. Why is this client telling me this? Now, that is something that's speaking on your end. Understand that. Take a moment. Maybe pause for some time. Go to a senior. Go to your supervisor. Speak to them. So there are a lot of elements to the do's and don'ts, which I would like to say. So definitely being responsible for what's happening. So now that I'm working with kids, you know, children, there's a, you know, parents are also really involved, you know? So drawing boundaries over there is very difficult, actually. Something that I didn't know. I was like, yeah, that's my client. But now when you're having, you know, if you're working with a client that's like, I have a client that's say like, you know, 3 years old, 5 years old, 7 years old. Obviously, the parents are going to be very involved in the whole therapeutic understanding. So you know, knowing how to draw those boundaries are very important. Something that you may not only learn and understand in your BA, MA, but something you'll actually understand when you're in the field is how do I draw these boundaries over here? You know, a mother will tell you, no, tell me what is happening in the session. You know, what I need to know. You know, and you might feel, yeah, she's the mother. She needs to know what's happening. But now you're breaching that trust that you're having with your client. So, you know, understanding the balance you have there. Taking the child being the point of contact to say whatever he or she, they feels with the mother, with the father, whoever, with the caregiver. So understanding that point of contact. So, you know, there are a lot of things that you have learned in your MA, in your TY, in all of this. You've learned everything in theory and it's solidified in theory. But when you actually come out of the field, things are going to be different. You know, you're going to have difficulties that are going to come up. They're going to have hiccups that are going to come up and you won't have answers. There is sometimes a client will ask me a question and at that time, I honestly don't have an answer to give. So I actually tell them, I said, you know what, I think I need to pause here. You know, I'm going to, and I write it down. I said, just give me some time. So, you know, you're on the same page. I'm not like this person that knows everything, you know, because I don't know everything. So taking a moment, pausing there, breathing into it in a sense, and, you know, then coming back into the session and, you know, addressing that. So that is very important.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I've spoken to other therapists as well, and they said that you can never be a perfect therapist. You know, it's like like a lifelong learning. Like, you never stop learning when it comes to therapy.
Very true.
There are also times that I feel like we also learn from the clients, you know. That's another person sitting in front of us, dealing with a lot of stuff we probably dealt with in our past, right? So they may bring, like, experiences and emotions which we felt at a point we were feeling in that moment, and just like working together, I feel like that's also a lot of reflection being done in the therapeutic space. And and I feel like if you are accountable for something you've done wrong and you stick by what you tell your client, I feel like that's the best way to build that trust.
Definitely, it really helps in like building that trust with your client, because a lot of the therapeutic relationship is trust. You know, if I don't trust my therapist, or I don't trust the space, if I'm telling my therapist something and I can see that they're uncomfortable, that is so difficult for the client. You know, they are coming and sharing so much of their world. They're showing us their world, you know. And, you know, if we are taking a step back and if we are like, okay, no. So then, you know, your needs and expectations are coming. You know, sometimes in therapy, you know, you feel this, that, why isn't my client progressing so much? Why are they not becoming better? You know, so then I always like, so one of, I was speaking to a friend that was telling me this, and I was like, what is better? Who is better? You know, what is this point of comparison that, that is being put, that you're comparing that this person should be better? So, you know, that is your expectation coming in. That is your need that's coming. That's not the client's need. That's your need that they should be better. They should have had so much progress by now. They should feel better. Our role is just, in a limited sense, is to normalize what's happening, feeling accepted, feeling aware, noticing what's happening. We're not curing, because there's nothing that is to be cured. We're not fixing what is, you know, that fixing what is broken. They're not broken. You know.
Yeah, I feel I agree. Yeah, I feel like we as humans in general, we set too many standards for certain things. Like, even I feel like I see it all over Instagram and Twitter. People set beauty standards, you know, like if you look like this person, or this person is, you know, probably the most beautiful person in the world and all of that. And I think the same thing about when you talk about being better, I feel like I don't think there can really be a standard of what better is. It depends from individual to individual.
It's that whole aspect of good enough. Am I enough? You know, that is something that is such a common, you know, script that's around, is that, am I good enough? Because you're always being compared to something else.
So Dia, in your opinion, do you think it's better to work in an organization when you're just starting out, or to start your private practice? Like, what are the pros and cons of each?
I would say definitely it's an individual choice. So it really depends on what you are comfortable with as a therapist, if you're getting into the field. Yeah, mm-hmm. So for me is I've always liked to work in a peer setting, and I was very comfortable with Mindtemple because I've been working with the same people for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, so I had that sort of comfort, you know, within them. Mm-hmm. So for me, an organization worked really well. So when it comes to private practice, for my opinion, it is definitely challenging, you know, mm-hmm. but it's also very, you know, you have the autonomy of doing things your way. Mm-hmm. Building a client base is more difficult. But I feel now when you have like things like Instagram, it's a good way to like reach out to mm-hmm. clients. Mm-hmm. Putting this as a header, Instagram is not therapy. It's just mm-hmm. a way to maybe reach out to therapists and, mm-hmm. you know, see what kind of framework they're working with. You know, is it resonating with you? Have they said something that's like an aha moment for you? So, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like private practices work. I'm seeing a lot of like Instagram pages, and I feel that's really amazing because it's also, you know, spreading a lot of awareness about mental health, mm-hmm. you know, understanding, deconstructing ideas of therapy that, you know, people may hold. Mm-hmm. And with private practice, you are your brand, which is, I think, amazing. Mm-hmm. You're being your own brand. Now, when it comes to organizations, so the way Mindtemple works is we have psychiatrists, and generally her name is Dr. Anjali Chabria, and she's the founder of Mindtemple, and she's worked over I think 25 years or something. Yeah, I think 25 Ooh, wow. years plus. Wow. Yeah, she's brilliant. And so she generally, so mostly clients will always, you know, approach her, and then from there we get you know, she connects to the mm. therapists and stuff. Mm. Mm. So for us, you know, we do get a more easier, you know, building base, in the sense we get more clients. But I don't know how that works. I really don't know too many people in private practice. I actually know a lot of my friends have got into organizations. Mm. So I don't really know much about the private practice space, but I really feel it's an individual choice as to what are you expecting? What are your needs? You know, mm. do you feel like it'll be better if you operated in an organization? So in an organization also, we have a lot more things that come up. Like, so I'm a co-facilitator of a cancer, grief, loss and bereavement support group. You know, so these are all opportunities that, you know, be given to Dr. Anjali, and then, you know, she'll connect us therapists and, you know, group us into different aspects. So, you know, I, from my experience, an organization works well for me because I actually really like having peers, because I feel like that for me is a good way to kind of check in. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, in a private space, I feel that may become difficult. But again, I don't think I might be the right person to share on private space because I'm private practice, because mm-hmm. I've not really done a lot of my understanding and work there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So, Dia, in society, there tends to form a hierarchy in every profession, especially in India, and I'm sure you must be knowing about that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel there is any such hierarchy when it comes to various kinds of psychologists?
Yeah, so it's a very nice question. I think you're going to be putting me in a spot over here. But so generally, I mean, from my experience, obviously psychiatrists are given the first upper hand. And then kind of looked at, I think then maybe clinical psychologists, counseling, industrial, you know, like just, and then, you know, if you have anyone, neuropsychology, because they're not that. And I feel now that comes from a lot of place of lack of awareness.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to kind of put them in a hierarchy because the work that they all are doing is so different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like how, in what way are we categorizing them into like one stream?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely feel, yeah, there is a hierarchy. I mean, I faced it, you know, on a personal basis as well. Fortunately, not in my organization, because we really try to maintain a more equal approach, and I feel that works well for us.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like, I mean, I'm just not even a year into therapy, and I see like my senior psychologist just like pushing me out there, like, no, take this up, take that up.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, wait, you were like, you have had so many years of experience, and they're like, this is how you're going to learn. So, you know, I mm-hmm. feel so comfortable because I know they're there to compliment me mm-hmm. if anything happens. Like, I have, you know, so many mentors. So for me, that it works well.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see it in like in different senses. Yeah, I do see there is a hierarchy. But that does come from a place of, I think, you know, I think there needs to be more awareness of what kind of work people do. Because till now, I feel people will come up to me saying, oh, so can you prescribe medication? So then after you like, you know, go on like the definitions of what is a psychiatrist, a psychologist, mm-hmm. clinical psychologist, counseling psychologist. Obviously, there's an overlap. But the work they do is very different to kind of, it's difficult for us to kind of club them into one thing and form a hierarchy, you know? So,
And I feel like in India, I mean, I could be wrong here, but I feel like the hierarchy takes place. Why? Because people are like, okay, if this person has doctor and name, they are probably good. Clinical psychologists, now they are called clinical psychologists if they are RCI approved, like if they have the license.
Correct.
That's why they are higher up in the hierarchy.
Yeah.
Counseling, because there is no license, I feel like they're third, I'd say. And then industrial, because over here, no, I don't think corporates really care about mental health. I think only, I spoke to someone else the other day and they told me only after like the Sushant Singh Rajput case, you know, to probably increase their brand name, they started showing that they care about mental health and all of that. And then I feel like all that sports psychology and all that is like, there's nowhere. And this is obviously very specific to India, you know.
Correct.
So, yeah, I think that's, if I had to put it simply, I think that's how it would be, the hierarchy that takes place,
yeah. Go on. So, there was this one, when you spoke about the whole corporate thing, you know, this, so we have an offshoot called the Mind Temple Institute of Behavioral Sciences. And, you know, after the pandemic, we realized, and because of so much of pandemic anxiety, work from home, you know, such a different context, like your world has changed. The way you're operating has changed. You're with your family 24/7. So much of frustration, so much of uncertainty, so much of anxiety that's come up. So a lot of actually corporates have now taken a more proactive role when it comes to mental health. You know, which is, I find it so great. Like, we see so many like companies will like, you know, approach us like, and we do like basics of mental health. Just, you know, understanding on mental health is, and you know, for us, because we're in the profession, we feel, all these people know. But the clients we're getting are people that have mental health concerns. They're facing some challenges. But, you know, some people, you don't know the you know, they don't know that, oh, what I'm feeling is actually anxiety. You know, the identification. And I'm not saying that they have to identify and label it something. But, oh, what I'm feeling is normal. This does happen. I'm not this out of this box person that's feeling it. Yeah, people are feeling it. So when the conversation is there, I feel especially in corporate settings where, you know, there's a larger audience we're reaching to. There's so many people we're reaching to, like so many, like easily over like thousands. And then, you know, it's like, then it's like more of like a trickle down effect where they'll tell their family, like, you know, we went for this and they spoke about this. That makes sense. So, you know, I feel reaching out to corporates is such a great way of like spreading awareness.
I also feel like as a society, we tend to like take a step towards mental health when, you know, things are getting bad. Like, if we hear about someone's depression or someone taking their own life, I feel like that's when we really act. And I feel like that shouldn't be the way it should be, right? We should just be present with how things are right now and act towards it right now.
Yeah, and that's also, so true.
Yeah, I also wanted to add one more thing. How you said that, you know, at Mind Temple, you have this support system who you have to go back to. So if you're feeling anxious, you can just go and speak to someone there, you know. So it's a very supportive environment. And I feel like as a therapist, you need to have a good support system, not so like multiple people, but just maybe 2-3 people who you can rely on.
Yeah.
And I remember during like my interviews, the first question which I was asked was, do you have a good support system? Tell us more about it. Because it's going to be emotionally draining, right?
Definitely.
Being in this profession. So I think just that having that supportive environment is super important.
Definitely. I so agree with that. Because you're doing so much work, you know? And I always call this the art of disengagement. When to engage and when to disengage. You know, now when pandemic has, you know, now when we're doing, say, therapy in a pandemic setting, things have changed. So earlier, I don't know how other organizations work. So I'm just going to speak for Mind Temple. But earlier it was that none of the counselors had like a personal contact with the client. Like they didn't have our numbers. Right. So because we had like an administrative team that contacted, fixed up the appointments, confirmed the appointments. So, you know, we went like the therapist went back home to home. You know, now the clients have our numbers, and that does set up different challenges where people will message you at any time of the day. And obviously that is, if someone is having a panic attack, if someone is having any active suicidal thoughts, then you do need to address that. So that, you know, there's a constant need, like you're constantly working, that which does get difficult. You know, you're bringing work back to your home, which is something that never actually did happen with at least the previous therapist that I saw at Mind Temple. Like, they did all their testing work then, like, okay, 6 p.m., 7 p.m., done. You know, I'm finished. I'm done with the day. Now I'm home. Now I'm with family. I'm just going to chill. I'm going to go for my workout. You know, then I'm in my own space. But definitely with the pandemic, the boundaries are actually difficult to draw. And this is something that I personally also struggle with. Because I do see myself so many times, like, you know, 10 o'clock, I'm finishing off a report, doing this, doing that. And there are times I have to be like, no, just like, don't touch your laptop. Just stay away from it. So I'll go to my dog and I'll be like, entertain me, you know, play with me. Because I need to get my mind off work. So, you know, you're constantly working. Because, you know, your help, you know, the whole thing of you're talking to people, right? You know, I have to help. But there are times you need to draw boundaries for yourself. Because you're this field, I mean, one of the most important concepts I'm sure you would have heard of is compassion fatigue. And it's such a real thing, you know, something that I mentioned at the start, like when I come home, I tell nobody talk to me. I said, don't talk to me. Like my boyfriend will call me up at night. I'll just be like, nope, I can't hear a word. I'm so sorry. I need a break. And he's like, please take a break. And then I'll watch Friends or I'll watch some, like, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So, you know, find your spaces to like, you know, disengage, because you cannot always constantly engage in something.
Yeah.
You know, the more you're consuming of that, it does leave a toll on you. You do feel fatigued. You do feel tired. You know, when are you getting that break? Because now for me, WhatsApp is everything. I have everyone on my WhatsApp. You know, so that does get challenging. So knowing how and when to take those breaks and, okay, I'm not going to respond. I'm going to respond because for me, work hours are this. So now I've explicitly mentioned to my clients that these are my work hours. Unless an emergency, please contact. Otherwise, no. You need to set such strict rules, which is very, very important.
For sure. And also, since we were talking about the pandemic, right, like bringing in so much like stress and frustration, so like how did COVID hinder your sessions and generally practicing as a therapist? And and in what ways would it be harder to start practicing therapy during COVID?
So, you know, one thing that I'll definitely like wanted to like talk about was, you know, when in February, like when I was just getting done, like from in that time, I, you know, February 2020, I was like, yeah, in 1 month, I'm going to be done. In June, July, I'm going to go for a vacation. Then in August, I'm going to start work. You know, like you have this structured timeline. I was like looking forward to like, you know, meeting people, talking to people. I was really looking forward to that whole process. And now everything kind of just didn't happen. Nothing of that sort happened. There was a long gap. I started working in like November. Now, when we started working in November, I was like now talking to clients on screen. And that is so difficult because you're going to have that human connect, which is, I feel, one of like your foundation of therapy, right? That human connect. The essence of you seeing the person. They're seeing you. They see your body language. You see, you know, it's like, you know how we mirror a client. How do I mirror a client when there's a screen in front of me? So, you know, that's when you start have to like, you know, if you start improvising. I did face a lot of like, you know, technology issues. You're talking over the other person, you know, cutting off some Wi-Fi goes, this goes, that goes. And like sometimes just when you're in like, you know, in like a more of a breakthrough phase or you're talking about something and then something happens. And it is frustrating. It is definitely frustrating. But, you know, understanding the challenges you have and it's out of your control. You know, there's so many times you'd want to control it as a therapist. You know, I have perfect Wi-Fi, but something will happen. Something will maybe break your session. And then knowing, okay, now how do I go from here? How do I improvise? There's a lot of improvisation that needs to happen. So I have a few clients that, you know, are like 8 years old, 10 year old and all that. And for them, when it's on, everything they're doing is on a screen. They're always seeing the screen. So for them, it's almost like, okay, she's a teacher. You know, I don't want them to feel in a teacher setting. So I tell them, don't sit on your desk. I want them to sit comfortably. Even if they're lying down, I don't mind. Go make them sit in a you know, in a backyard. Make them sit where there's some nature. Make them sit next to nature. Give them something to touch. So I give them, I tell their parents, I say, give them clay. Give them, you know, like kind. I work with like kinetic sand. Like give them something to work with. Give them some toys next to them. Put some, because now we have to improvise. Because now in person, I would have we have like a playroom at Mind Temple. So, you know, we work in this playroom with, it's very colorful. So many toys are there. We play so many games. So now we have to work like, I play like Connect Four on the laptop. You know, so you have to improvise. How else do you build rapport with a child? Because a child is like, arre, ek aur 1 hour I have to spend with this person. I don't want to do one more session. I'm so tired. They're so done with screens. Everything for them is a screen. Their playtime is a screen. Then their teacher, all of their schoolwork is screen. Now, one more thing you're putting in screen is tough. You know, so then like I also been like I'll try to mimic the surroundings. So if I tell them, okay, if they are in like a place where there's greenery, I'll sit in my backyard. So, you know, almost they'll see like a similar environment. So, you know, the feeling that we're in the same environment, although we're not. So there's a lot of improvisation that needs to happen here. That is very important, because actually with children, it is very difficult to connect. So, you know, knowing that rapport building will take time, and let it take it time. Because earlier, when person to person, maybe 3-4 sessions may feel enough, you know, depending on clients. But 3-4 sessions do feel enough, because they're seeing you, they're talking to you, they know who you are. But here, they're not seeing you. You know, they're just seeing this much of your face. They're just seeing the squared image. How do they connect? So giving that time for rapport building, you know, taking its time, not rushing with it and trying to, okay, let's start work. No, you're in a very different setting. So know the limitations you're coming with. So improvise according to that.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like the more you force someone to like go like talk about what they've experienced, I feel like the more they'll resist it. So I think to just go and to just let them be in that present moment, I feel like they'll come around eventually, you know. Just depending on how safe and comfortable they feel.
Definitely.
I think the relationship just matters a lot.
Definitely.
Right. Quite a good episode. I learned a lot from you, honestly.
Yeah. I'm so glad.
But now I'm really, you know, stressed, and I feel so pressurized because I'm only 18. You know, I'm 6 years to go. And now I'm already scared. You know, you're telling me about the masters and all. I thought it'd be a little easier, but clearly I don't think so.
It is definitely terrifying me. Because I'm going in like 2 months, and I'm just gonna like, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I guess it's just to like go with the flow.
Take it as it comes. Like, I mean, just take baby steps. Start with baby steps. Just start with, okay, I have to do an assignment, do the assignment. Don't look at, oh god, I have exams in the next 3 months. Okay, the exams are coming, but take it small, because it is a lot. The reality is that it is a lot. You know, people will try to sugarcoat it. It's not that sweet. It is sweet and bitter. It's like a roller coaster. It's honestly like any other course. It's just more challenging, because also there's a lot of your own work that's involved. I feel that's what makes psychology more challenging, because a lot of inner work that you do.
So that
is, I feel like, added challenges that come onto the plate.
I feel like everyone who's listening, I'm pretty sure they will learn a lot from this episode. Because I personally did, and I'm sure Antara did as well.
I'm so glad. Thank you so much.
So thank you for being with us, Dia.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To everyone who's listening, thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.